Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
50-minute mark here on 93.7 The Fan is brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Back in old WCW days, they'd say the man they call Vader is joining us. I was going to say the man they call Kaboom is in studio
it's
now.
Time. It's time.
Vader time.
It's Vader time.
He'd have that big thing that blew steam out, that big like shoulder pad harness setup. You ever see him with that one? Big Van Vader.
Was that WCW?
That was WCW. They couldn't call him Big Van Vader in WWF. Yeah, they'd get in trouble for that. And he'd have that goofy thing shooting. He was the horns. He would put them on. Very interesting and intimidating guy. And a former college football player.
So how am I an interesting? Well, I'm interesting, of course. But how am I an intimidating guy? I'm not intimidating.
But your opinions, when you're right, they're so intimidating. They really...
Nah, people just call me an idiot.
They knock us over. Well, you have been able to really take a victory lap. I'll start it right there with you. Kaboom.
I'm worried about this victory lap.
No, I mean, I'm not pony. I'm not setting you up for the okey doke here. No, but I mean, I give you credit. You stuck to your guns in the face of people like me and Andrew and every person that probably responds to one of your, you know, like a tweet or anything else about Russell Wilson. You stuck to your guns there, and I will fully admit that he has played a certain level of football in these two games that have recalibrated my expectations and like belief of what is possible for this team. He plays like he did in the Giants game. I know he fumbled and that was a big play and they had to overcome it still, but that passing game looks like that. I would give them a puncher's chance against quite literally anyone, and I could not say that in years past.
Yeah, he's making the right decisions, at least through the first 2 weeks. You haven't seen too many, other than the first quarter of the first game, where you look at it and say, boy, those decisions are a little iffy or off. I mean, you combine that with his ability to throw the ball, and I think that's what you get. I think that's what they wanted from him. That's why Mike Tomlin signed him in March. That's what they wanted to see from him, to be able to make those decisions. That fumble, I don't know if I blame it on him. He's tried to step up. He got popped. Those things are going to happen from time to time. But you have to keep doing it. I mean, to be honest with you, week one, Jets, Giants, great, great, great. But you're going to have to continue to get better as you go down the season here. And that's the next stepping stone right now. Can he do this over 8, 10, 12 games to be able to perform like this? I don't see why not, but there's always that little doubt in the back of your mind is, can he sustain this for the duration of this season?
Well, the reason I think he can is one of the other things I was wrong about when we would do like these Fields or Wilson debates. I'd say, well, who reminds you more, when I would think of Arthur Smith's best offenses? That was Tannehill for those 2 years, and they had Henry, obviously, but who was the quarterback in – like athletic profile, who reminds you more of Tannehill? Well, that's Fields, because Tannehill was a top drawer athlete. Like, he could really get out and move, and he could lower his shoulder once in a while. I say Wilson doesn't look like that guy anymore. Certainly, he's never been that big, right? But like, when you actually watch them run play action, he reminds me of Tannehill for like the command and the confidence that he would have. He'd get outside the pocket in Tennessee, and he was throwing darts. Yep. And to me, that's been the biggest surprise, because like, I just thought Russ wasn't going to be able to do what he's done. When he gets on the move, especially moving to his right, I expect like very good things to happen here.
Which is crazy, because you saw him in Denver last year. It's not like he was a statue. It's not like he was a statue the years before that in Seattle. Has he?
He looks like Seattle Russ, though. That's, I guess, what's surprising.
Well, Seattle Russ would come up with some big third down scramble run plays. I don't know if that's in him quite yet.
I'm saying when he's not trying to run for the first down, when he's on the move intending to throw, he looks just as like poised, I guess, and as confident as Seattle Russ. That's been the big surprise.
Plus the accuracy, too. I mean, the waggles of Darnell Washington. All of a sudden, he's making Darnell Washington into a legitimate offensive threat right now in these two games. And I think that's one of the things you look at, too, is how he's been able to, okay, maybe they don't have the best number two, right? Number three wide receivers, but he's able to spread it around to enough guys so far, especially early in games, to keep them all engaged as well. And, you know, they're all been pretty successful, you know, and they're, except for probably Freiermuth. He hasn't had a, what, he had two catches last week?
I'm surprised they haven't.
He hasn't really shown out with Russ in there yet.
I'm surprised they haven't tried to run that waggle play with him. But I guess, like, the whole hook for running it with Washington is, well, nobody expects Washington to get the ball necessarily because he's not thought of that way.
Yeah. Plus, he's blocking. He's when that play happens,
he's got to fight
blocking,
through contact.
He's blocking for a good 2-3 seconds before he releases into the flat all by himself. Are you going to believe Pat Freiermuth is going to be that guy? Probably not. I mean, we can't even underestimate what Arthur Smith has meant to this, too, because he's scheming stuff up here. It's just not like Russell's going out there and saying, you know, I think I'm going to, you know, roll to my right and throw back to my left. Well, no, there's a lot of scheming going on here. And I think that's one thing that's probably been what we've been overlooked a lot is how bad, how much better Arthur Smith is at the same position.
Oh, no, I would say that's, like, I was trying to think of earlier in the unsung storylines, because we all focused on Russ, and Pickens is happy because if he's not scoring, it's either because of a penalty or a bizarro play where he's got his foot slamming down twice, whatever. But, like, to me, Smith is the unsung story because I'm not sitting there with, like, a play sheet, you know, learning how to set up plays. But it's very obvious when you see somebody that was just calling stuff versus somebody who's calling stuff to call stuff later.
Yes.
Like, that has been the biggest difference. It's obvious that the guy knows something about play sequencing and setting up a defense, and it does not seem like Matt Canada knew any of that.
And it seems like anywhere you talk to anybody in Atlanta, that wasn't Arthur Smith. You talk to anybody in Tennessee, at least during their lean years at the end there, they have negative things to say about him. I don't know if it's him finding his niche right now, him having better athletes, but he's in a groove right now. I mean, he's in a groove. He knows how he wants the offense to perform, and as long as you're able to run the ball as you can and do that play action and take some deep shots, I don't see anything stopping that. I mean, if you go and go, you know, 4 or 5 defensive backs, they're going to run it down your throat. And if you put 8 and 9 in the box, he's going to pretty much pick you apart,
too. If you go two high safeties against them, they're going to run the ball now.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing.
As long as they keep able to run the ball like that. Now, if you have a team that can stop the run with those 7, or at least the front 4, then it might.
Well, this is where I don't.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Understand, like, there have been, and I get it, you know, we're not talking about the greatest show on turf here that just looks like an unstoppable machine.
No.
But by the same token, they just played a team that has, in my opinion right now, other than maybe Chris Jones, the best interior defensive lineman in the league in Lawrence, and they ran it all over them.
Yep.
And it was Harris. They're going to get Patterson back now. They're going to get their starting center. They are going to get Frazier back after the bye, you would assume, right?
Yeah, I talked to him. I talked to him the other day, and he seems like he's close. It would be close.
At worst, they might have to play one game more without him, but probably back by the Ravens game.
Yeah, they might. If McCollum's playing as well as he has, they might just be a little bit careful, right?
My point is, though, they're going to have all three of their backs. Suddenly, the guy that we were dogging, or at least me and Pony were early in the year, because Patterson looks so much better, now Harris looks like an actual first-round running back. Their line, for all the problems they have pass blocking at times with guys like Jones, all of those guys seem capable of moving people in the run game. Like, I don't know, man. That's like the other part of this that I guess I'm pleasantly surprised by, because I kind of just lazily went along with, well, if you've got Fields, the numbers are in your favor in the run game. Their running game looks better with Wilson now.
Yeah.
Like, it just does.
I mean, regardless of how well Wilson plays, and runs the ball, Najee's going to be better. And I don't, you alluded to it a little bit, I think, but Cordell Patterson's coming back. Jalen Warden hasn't really been a huge part of this offense.
He finally looks healthy. He finally looks healthy, though, to
you
me.
You're getting play from Darnell Washington. Michael Pruitt's catching the ball. Just imagine if they did have that, not legitimate, but a better number two guy right now.
You still think they're looking hard for one?
I think they are, yes. I think they'll probably end up getting one here before Tuesday.
You think it's – okay, I'm
going to say – I don't know who, though.
Why don't I –
it's not going to be anybody who's going to knock your socks off.
How about Darius Slayton? Because under these auspices, they love guys who come in and play well against them. There's like an obsession.
Another thing is Van Jefferson and he are buddies. They work out in the off season. So even if you do bring him in, Van Jefferson is not going to – like
you mean Wilson's his buddy?
No.
Oh, Slayton's his buddy?
Slayton's
okay.
His buddy. So even if they do come in, it's not like Van Jefferson has a lot of leeway to complain one way or another. But those two would get along as well. I don't know. I would take Slayton.
You think that's too rich for their blood, though? Like,
no.
You're thinking Lesser? Because he's played well. Slayton's been good.
I don't think anybody's too rich for their blood right now because everybody that they're seeking or who would become free are eight-month rentals or eight-game rentals, right? Mm-hmm. Eight-game rentals aren't going to cost you a lot of money, man. If you can get a fifth-round pick for a guy that you know darn well is not going to be on your team next year, why wouldn't you do it? Especially if you're terrible like the Giants. If they play this week, I assume they do. What are they, 2-6, 2-5?
2-6.
They're 2-7. Would you rather have a fifth-round pick or Darius Slayton? I mean, Mike Williams is still out there.
There's the Commanders, so they probably will be 2-7.
Yeah, there's a couple guys out there that I think at worst they got to bring in if it's not on the level with a Van Jefferson, Calvin Austin, a tick better, but you're not going to find anybody who's going to just say, hey, you're our number wide receiver too. But with the depth issues there, you got to have somebody else. I mean, say Van Jefferson, we rip on him constantly, right? What if he gets hurt? Then what are you going to do? Throwing Scotty Miller out there?
Scotty Miller had one go right through the wickets.
Yeah.
By
I
the
mean,
way.
You, people forget about that throw. You probably couldn't have had a better throw of Russell Wilson to Scotty Miller down the sideline. That was right in his hands.
The only thing I would say is you could argue, I guess Aikman kind of made the argument, you throw it 2 yards further, it's in his hands without like the defender being there. Because that's the reason he didn't catch it.
Probably the reason why he doesn't catch it because he's 5'9".
You know what I mean, though. I mean, the ball did go through the defender's hands kind of first.
I think Van Jefferson and Calvin.
I know Pickens.
George Pickens that
catches
catch.
That ball. Yes, does Pickens get 2 feet down? Does he do a one-footed hopscotch down the sideline?
Every single throw can't be absolutely a dart on the money. That is darn close to it. So you better be making that catch.
The other thing about his game that seems to have been unlocked is, I know the guy had like a career game. It's like him, Dez Bryant, and I can't remember the other guy with a punt return touchdown and a receiving touchdown in the same game on Monday Night Football, Calvin Austin. It's Dez Bryant and one other guy whose name now completely eludes me, but they had that stat out there. I'm starting to feel like he's better than we've given him credit for.
Calvin?
Yeah.
Works hard.
People say he's, I mean, I think you've said this to us. Mm-hmm. Other people who watch them at practice are the film guys who are actually looking at the All 22, open on every play.
Yep.
Like open all the time. I don't know what the max out role for him is in an offense, but he feels way more like a weapon than an afterthought
because,
suddenly.
Defenders are afraid of him because of the speed. If you remember the combine 3 years ago, initially it said 4.03. Do you remember that? Then they screwed it up. But some people like, timed it manually, he said it was like a 4-1, so the guy can move.
Yep.
And you can't let him get behind you whatsoever, so I think that's the case. He's just a little bit on the small side.
But Wilson,
he's not going to be your number two.
Wilson throwing him that touchdown, though, like makes me think there's use for him. There's three or four targets a game that can be very useful for
him. I hate to keep going back to Russell Wilson, but did you see
that? Why do you hate that?
That's
the story.
What I'm saying is, did you see the throw and the anticipation? That ball was out of his hands before he made that cut to the...
Pony corrected me on that because I kind of said, well, Austin was open, and he said, no, if you're watching that, he threw him open. He threw it to a spot, and then the ball was in the spot that made it look like a pitch and catch.
Yeah, that's the anticipation is... half the ball game with quarterbacks. And Justin Fields just, I mean, back to him, he's just not at that point. I mean, he might eventually be at that point, but a guy who's been in the league 12 years and has the numbers he has, you throw, I mean, Ben would be able to throw
Ben
that
would have
open.
Thrown that ball open,
yes.
Yeah.
It was weighted. There was sometimes, I can't remember what it was. It looked like it was a bad throw by Wilson in the end zone, but he had to throw it behind him because he was going to get smacked over the middle.
Yeah.
Once again, you're throwing guys open to a point where it looks like a bad throw, but it really wasn't. And that's what he brings you.
Mark Cabali in for the next half hour, 40 minutes or so. So we got a lot of ground to cover. Steelers at the bye week, 6-2. If the season ended today, which is Mark's favorite game, they would be the AFC's number 2 seed taking on the 7th seeded Chargers. They would avoid the Ravens or any of those other ugly little opponents in the first round. 412-928-9370 is the fan text line, brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. We'll talk Mike Tomlin, too, because this feels like the makings of one of his best coaching jobs in a very long time. Get Mark's opinion on that one coming up next. First, got a fan headline for you right now.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app